Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And my goodness, guys, my goodness, we are coming off of UFC 308, where we might have had our best main card predictions of all time. I think we might have. We nailed absolutely everything. We went 10-3 on the entire card on predictions. I am so excited to recap the entire card and give my thoughts on the co-main event and the main event because they were absolutely insane. Also going to be recapping week 8 of the NFL season. I'm thinking in maybe a week or two we get back into our weekly NHL and NBA catch-ups, but I'm going to wait for both of those seasons to continue getting going, if you know what I'm same. Also going to be doing our WWE Crown Jewel predictions. I forgot to do my Bad Blood predictions, and that made me sad, so I've decided to do some Crown Jewel predictions, because I occasionally watch a little WWE, not too much as of late. I usually just get clips from online, like Instagram and TikTok, but I mean, still kind of want to talk about that. Of course, new UFC news, new stuff going on in pop culture. We are coming off of a long weekend. I spent a lot of money. I drank a lot of alcohol. I had a lot of fun, and now I must get back into the swing of things down here at college as the semester winds to an end. I mean, it's coming to an end, guys, but this podcast is just beginning. Of course, kicking off every episode, new UFC news, and we do have a couple new fights to talk about. I did see an announcement that Umar Nurmagomedov versus Song Yadong will not be the Tampa main event for the February 14th card to end the year. We still have no idea what that is, and as November approaches, literally this upcoming Friday, we are going to have less than a month and a half to then kind of find a main event for that. So we will have to work on that. And as the year comes to an end, I'm very excited to get into my end of year award. So I am working on that, going through things, and we may have some new KOs of the year, may have some new submissions of the year. We'll have to see. But new UFC news, new UFC fights. This one announced for UFC Vegas 101 going down, of course, January 11th. It'll be the first event of 2025. And of course, it's at the UFC Apex, my favorite place. This one in the middleweight division as Abdul Razak Al-Hassan is back as he takes on Cesar Almeida. Abdul Razak Al-Hassan, 12-6 professionally, 6-6 in the UFC. Biggest wins probably over Nico Price, Claudio Ribeiro. He's been all right as of late. Nothing too spectacular going on with Abdul Razak Al-Hassan. All I do know about him, though, is that he was actually born in Minneapolis. So that's something cool. His opponent, Cesar Almeida, is 2-1 in the UFC, coming off a win over Ior Portero, where there are a lot of eye pokes, a lot of low groin shots. There's a little bit of controversy in that one on why there weren't many calls, but he's back. Only loss in the UFC is to Roman Kopilov, 6-1 professionally with 4 knockouts. This should be an interesting one. I'd probably favor Cesar Almeida in this one if it's a striking battle, because where Cesar Almeida struggles is in the grappling department, and I don't really see Abdul Razak Al-Hassan going to that realm. This fight rebooked for UFC Tampa going down December 14th. It will not be the main event, let me tell you that. Saeed Nurmagomedov in the men's bantamweight division will take on Daniel Marcos. This one is absolutely going to be a fantastic matchup. Saeed is 18-3, 7-2 in the UFC. He is so talented. He has some good round one knockouts, some tight submissions. He's talented. Always been on the brink of the top 15. But those two losses, one was to Jonathan Martinez in a fight I did not think he lost. And another one was to, I believe, Ryony Barcelos in a fight I did not think he suffered a defeat in. But decisions will be decisions. He's never been finished in his career. His opponent, Daniel Marcos, 16-0 with 1 no contest. This guy, super talented, yet to lose so far. He's hailing from Peru. Wins over Davy Grant, Samuel Oliveira, John Castaneda. This will be the biggest test of his 16-0 career. I'll be very curious to see how he performs. And the final fight announced this one to end off the year on that December 14th card in the men's featherweight division as Sean Woodson takes on Fernando Padilla. Sean, 6-1-1. I mean, he's been on a excellent win streak. Wins over Terrence McKinney, Alex Caceres, Yusuf Salal. No one's been able to crack the code on Sean Woodson. He also has a win over Charles Jourdain on that win streak. And he's just so big for featherweight. He's like 6'2", 6'3", or something. Crazy reach as well. 12-1 professionally. I'll be interested to see how Sean Woodson performs here as he nears the rankings. I'm actually surprised he's not getting a ranked opponent coming off of that Alex Caceres win. But Fernando Padilla, his opponent, 2-1 in the UFC, 16-5 professionally. Biggest win probably over Julian Arosa. This is just another test for him, but I do think this will go to Sean Woodson. His size at featherweight. This dude has the build of a welterweight. Okay, he's lanky, he's big, but he just hasn't been able to crack the ranking. So we'll see if he can get in with a win here. I wish him the best of luck. But that's really all the new UFC news that we have. I might mention this later, but we will be going to Edmonton to kick off our November card. So that card looks mighty good. In the main event, you have top five flyweights in the world in Brandon Moreno and Amir Albazi. Top five women's flyweights in the co-main event, Erin Blanchard, Rose Namajunas. You also have Derek Lewis back in action. You have Charles Jourdain back in action. Jack Shore, Mike Mallett, Marc-Andre Barry, Ute. Even got a little Alexander Romanoff. This card is loaded. I will be excited to drop my predictions for that, I believe, on our next episode. Yeah, we'll do a little Halloween special. I'll cook up something fun and festive for that. But that's all your new UFC news. I'm sure they'll be announcing some bigger fights as the year kind of progresses. But as the year progresses for a whole variety of different sports, it is, of course, progressing in the WWE world. And they're having another PLE Premium Live event. This one taking place in Saudi Arabia in Riyadh. The UFC's been there before. Always a good time when they go over there, right? Who was that? Umar Nurmagomedov, Corey Sandhagen. Was that the main event? Was that the main event? No, they changed it. Oh, it was Robert Whittaker versus Ikram Akhachev. That's what the main event was. But the main event for Crown Jewel, it will be Cody Rhodes versus Gunther for the first ever Crown Jewel Championship. This is a very goofy WWE event. It is a money suck, is a money grab. But there's seven matchups currently announced for it. We'll talk about them a bit, and I'll give my prediction on who I think will win. So, kicking us off, I don't know if this one's actually official yet, but how WWE works is they basically run two programs for their main brand. They have like a side brand called NXT, but that's its whole little thing. So you got Raw on Mondays, SmackDown on Fridays. These PLEs, they take place on Saturdays and Sundays. And SmackDown, Raw is always live on Mondays, but SmackDown sometimes, especially when they go overseas, is pre-taped. Sometimes it's live on Fridays, sometimes it's pre-taped the week before. And this episode is actually pre-taped, so they're just, because they have nowhere to hold it in Saudi Arabia, because they hold it at this giant stadium, and there's no smaller venue for them to record SmackDown, and they're not going to have people film in the United States and then fly over, and then they immediately have to perform. So this was actually pre-taped, so this first matchup on unannounced, this first, what do you want to call it, wrestling match? I think it's called match, you know. I get confused if I call like UFC fights, they call these matches, I don't know. But starting us off, one of the best feuds that the WWE has ever seen, you get a six-man tag team match as Roman Reigns reunites with the Usos to take on the current bloodline, Solo Sikoa, Tama Tonga, and Tonga Loa. As I believe, Jacob Fatu is actually still kind of injured. But yes, I was mentioning the pre-taped episode because this hasn't been announced. And I did see on TikTok a fan recording and Roman Reigns and the Usos are reuniting. This is massive. This is massive. My interest is peaked at this. Will I be watching this card? Probably not. I'm probably going to be busy Saturday enjoying Halloween weekend. But this is massive. This feud has been taking place over 4 years. Ever since Roman Reigns debuted this gimmick of the Tribal Chief in 2020, it has just been non-stop action. The Usos have had their highs, their lows. They're all coming to reunite. And I think it's building up to Bloodline War Games in a month at Survivor Series. In Los Angeles, nonetheless. As for this one, I think you gotta give this to Roman Reigns and the Usos. The Bloodline can just continuously take losses left, right, and center. And they don't really lose any credibility. You know, Jacob Fatu will definitely be in the mix. Who knows, maybe The Rock will make an appearance. You never know nowadays. But Roman Reigns, the Usos, reuniting. It's, you know, it's great. It's great. I love the storytelling they do in the WWE. And I think we got to give this one to Roman Reigns and the Usos. Another tag team matchup for you, as you'll have a fatal four-way tag team match for the WWE Women's Tag Team Championship. I could really care less. I don't really know too much about the women's tag team divisions in the WWE. I mean, Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair are the champions. You also have Damage Control, Kairi Sane, and Io Sky. They're both talented. Meta 4, Lash Legend, and Ja'Kari Jackson. No idea who they are. Then you have a team of Chelsea Green and Piper Niven, who are kind of just comical relief. Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair are definitely going to win this. I predict this will be a pretty entertaining matchup. And this is pretty groundbreaking, you know, as the WWE was the first company really to break through with having women perform in any regard in that region. region of the world. So kudos to them, and the fact that you're having 8-1 tag team match really just shows how far professional wrestling has come in general. I'm giving this to Jade and Bianca. They're red hot. They, for some reason, have not broken them up. Once they break them up, those two will have an amazing feud. But they're still champions. I don't really see anyone being the ones to dethrone them. Maybe Damage Control, Kairi Sane, Sky. They're very talented. But as for the other two, no. So, retaining taking place. After that, triple threat match for the WWE United States Championship as LA Knight, your champion, who's held the belt since SummerSlam, takes on Andrade and Carmelo Hayes. This match has had an interesting build. Carmelo Hayes and Andrade, the two best mid-card wrestlers on SmackDown at the moment. They were supposed to have like this Game 7 wrestling match, and they had been having like multiple ones over all these SmackDowns, and it led to this final one. It was called Game 7. You know, they had each beaten each other three times, and then you get here, and LA Knight kind of messes up the finish, and it leads to a triple threat match, and we'll be having a triple threat match in Saudi Arabia. The Saudi Arabia cards are meant more just to money suck the Saudi Arabians. They're big money deals. Nothing really canon happens here, so I think LA Knight's going to retain. I don't see them dropping the belt here, especially under this new Paul Levesque, Triple H era of running the shots. So LA Knight, he'll probably retain. But I do think Andrade and Carmelo Hayes do deserve United States Championship matches. And I think Carmelo Hayes is WWE Championship quality one day. Maybe not now, maybe not in 5 years, but down the road, this guy's going to be something special. After that, we have Bad Blood in this one as Randy Orton takes on Kevin Owens. They used to be friends. They all used to be buddies with Cody Rhodes, but Kevin Owens snapped for some reason. He felt like he was being neglected, or like, I don't know what. He felt like he wasn't being given opportunities. I don't know what the storytelling aspect is there, but Randy Orton, he's coming to defend Cody Rhodes. Him and Kevin Owens hate each other. And my only complaint about this one, and I actually heard this from Santi Zap, who is a wrestler commentator on YouTube, is that there just isn't a stipulation here. Like, it's just a normal wrestling match, and these two guys hate each other so much, and it's just a normal match. Like, you can lose by disqualification. I could even see Kevin Owens beating Randy Orton and having Randy Orton win by disqualification, because Kevin Owens is just out of control. So I do think you give this one to Kevin Owens. I think it's one of those situations where you got to have the villains win somehow. And if I'm going through everything so far, Roman Reigns and the Usos are the good guys. Jake Carl, Bianca Belair are the good guys. LA Knight is the good guy. Kevin Owens is the first heel of the evening. I think you got to give it to the heel, Kevin Owens, here. And this storyline can definitely lead us into WrestleMania. I see them trying to maybe build up Randy Orton versus Cody Rhodes. I don't know if we're actually going to try and do that or not at some point, maybe. But Kevin Owens, Randy Orton should be an entertaining matchup. And these two have been putting on some of the best work of their career despite being in the latter stages of it. So, should be entertaining. After that, here's been a fun feud as Seth Rollins back in action since his injury midway through the year as he takes on Bronson Reed. Bronson Reed has been given a huge push over the last 2 to 3 months, and it's been great to see a good worker, good in-ring worker, and for his size, he is so agile. He loves to jump off the top rope. I mean, we're talking about 300, 280-pound guy right here. Definitely 300. I mean, he is a big, big boy, and they're putting him in a match here with Seth Rollins. I don't know if they give him the win, though. It just doesn't really feel like this is the one where they give him the win. I would love to see it. Personally, I would love to see them give him the win, but it just doesn't really strike me as that. So I am going to give this one to Seth Rollins. It just kind of feels like what they're going to do, in my opinion. But, I mean, Bronson Reed, he'll be around for a while. I could see him being a champion of some regard. And I think they're just trying to do a filler feud as CM Punk and Drew McIntyre kind of heal after their absolute war. CM Punk will definitely be back, and him versus Seth Rollins, I think, is the direction they're going to try and take. I'll be interested to see, though. But my prediction, Seth Rollins. With that, we get into this is the one issue with the Crown Jewel event, is that for some reason, instead of just having champions defend their belts, they decided to institute the Crown Jewel Championship, which is like, oh, this like $100,000 belt, you know, it's littered with diamonds and gold and stuff. And we're like, we don't care. We could care less about it. And they've decided the top two women champions and the top two men champions are going to each fight each other, and they will each win respectively for their gender. So first off, you got your Raw Women's Champion, Liv Morgan, taking on your SmackDown Women's Champion, Nia Jax. And this one is far more interesting than the men's due to the fact that Tiffany Stratton, who is actually from Prior Lake, Minnesota, holds the Money in the Bank briefcase. And the Money in the Bank briefcase, for anyone that doesn't know WWE, basically allows you to cash in at any opportunity and get a championship opportunity. opportunity, you know, anytime you see like, hey, this is a great opportunity to cash in, you can do that. And at any point in time, you can get a championship match. And what's going on with this one is that Tiffany Stratton's been kind of teasing, hey, maybe I'll cash in on Nia Jax. Maybe I'll cash in on Liv Morgan. You also have Rhea Ripley in the mix with Liv Morgan. They've been in a feud. This is far more interesting with the potential for a cash in. Let's say you don't actually do a cash in, which I think this is going to get a little messy at the end. I do think they, I don't even know. I think you might give this to Nia Jax. If I'm being honest, I think you might give this to Nia Jax as a SmackDown Women's Champion. And my only thought process is they're not going to have both SmackDown champions win their Crown Jewel Championship, and they're not going to have both men win it. It's so confusing. They've created a fake belt. This is like the BMF belt for UFC, where it doesn't mean really anything, but just something to have something on the line, you know. And speaking of which, the BMF belt, there's actually a curse with that. We should touch on that later on today's episode. But Liv Morgan, Nia Jax, I'm going to say Nia Jax wins it. I say things get a little screwy maybe, but if Liv Morgan wins, I would not be surprised. It's just nothing's really relevant here. Like, this won't, once this ends, there'll be a couple bits and pieces that leave this event, but other than that, this is just a filler show. With that, ladies and gentlemen, it brings us to the final match for Crown Jewel. I'm assuming it's going to be the main event. Gunther, your Raw World Heavyweight Champion, takes on Cody Rhodes, your SmackDown Undisputed WWE Champion. Your WWE Champion, World Heavyweight Champion, Gunther, Cody Rhodes. Then this is the issue here, is really all the buildup has been is, hey, you guys are the world champions for your respective divisions, or like brands, Raw and SmackDown. You're going to fight for this imaginary belt, the Crown Jewel Championship, and whoever wins it, and is the better champion. So, I mean, I don't really know what angle you go here. That you definitely cannot have a clean finish here, because whoever loses, if you lose clean to one of these guys, you'll lose a lot of your hype. But I do think Gunther wins this. I just kind of get the vibe they're going to give this to Gunther for some reason. But there is the possibility Goldberg gets in the mix, costs Gunther it. There's also the possibility the Bloodline gets involved, costs Cody Rhodes it, or maybe Kevin Owens comes in, costs Cody Rhodes the win. But similar to the Liv Morgan Nia Jax one, I could see either person winning. I'm going to say Gunther just because I kind of like Gunther better than Cody Rhodes, but at the end of the day, there's no stakes. There's no stakes with this, and it's almost irrelevant. It's almost irrelevant. But Crown Jewel, I don't doubt, will be an interesting card. I don't doubt that we will see some great wrestling matches. I think LA Knight, Andrade, and Carmelo Hayes is going to be great wrestling. I think Seth Rollins and Bronson Reed are going to surprise a lot of people. And Randy Orton and Kevin Owens are going to be going too warm. Roman Reigns and the Usos is probably the most storyline-based matchup they're going to have on here. And I don't even know if that's actually confirmed, but according to WWE's page, it is confirmed on Wikipedia, and I trust Wikipedia. I know people are like, oh, don't trust Wikipedia. I think Wikipedia is more trustworthy than people give it credit for, but those are your Crown Jewel predictions. I encourage you guys to check it out. Let me know what you guys think. I'm always curious to hear people's opinions on professional wrestling. And yes, I know it's fake. I watch it for the storylines and just because it's entertaining. It's called World Wrestling Entertainment, all right? Not World Profet. That's not like real. I have no idea what to make of that, but let's just move on. All right, week 8 of the NFL. That's what's next up on our agenda. A lot of games took place. We didn't do awful on picks, but I'm yet to win picks, okay? I'm in multiple pick'em leagues, and I'm yet to win a freaking week in picks. It's pissing me off. Also, the Vikings lost, and the Packers and Lions won. Let's get into things. There were some crazy things, though, but kicking us off, we, of course, had the Vikings and the Rams playing on Thursday Night Football, and, I mean, the Rams won 30-20 under the most ridiculous circumstances I've ever seen. There was a blatant face mask call to end the game, and they just didn't call it. They just didn't call it, and the NFL couldn't even post the game-winning, like, play. Okay, they couldn't even post a safety sack to win the game because they knew that it was messed up, and they're just going to sweep it under the rug, and nothing will happen to it, and the Vikings are not going to be 5-2. Utterly ridiculous. I was pretty heated, but then we did go out to the bars after that, which was actually a pretty good time. I actually won a game in pool, funny enough. But yes, the Rams won 30-20 fantasy-wise. Justin Jefferson had 19.5 fantasy points. Sam Darnold, 18.2. Aaron Jones, 11.5. For the Rams, Matt Stafford, 24.76. Kyren Williams, 22.6. And Puka Nacua, 18.1. Cooper Kupp also, 16.1. Puka and Cooper both returning, looking like stars, looking like professional starters. Game-wise, I mean, we kick things off, Vikings score, then Kyren Williams scores, and then the Vikings score. So, I mean, you get 14-7, you get three touchdowns in the first quarter. Pretty entertaining. Second quarter, Cooper Kupp gets a touchdown, 14-14 going into half. Nothing much more better than that. Will Record then hits a field goal in the third, and then DeMarcus Robinson catches a 25-yard touchdown. And then you had it 21-17 for the Rams. We would then make it 21-20 before DeMarcus Robinson caught his second touchdown pass of the day. And then with a minute and a half left, Sam Darnold was sacked in the end zone for a safety. Brought down, by the way, by his face mask, which is illegal in the NFL. Utterly ridiculous. Minnesota, we're out for blood next week. Let me tell you that. The NFL is about to pay for what they've done. Sam Darnold, 18 for 25, 242 touchdowns. Sam Darnold had a good day. Aaron Jones, 19 rushes, 58 yards, was held in check. JJ, 8 catches, 115 yards. Nothing to be mad about there. Josh Oliver, 2 catches, 1 was a touchdown. And Trent Sherfield Jr. caught 1 pass, first of like the last few weeks, and it was a touchdown pass. Good for him. Vikings, man, our defense has been kind of lackluster. Compared to the first 5 weeks, last 2 weeks, not so good. Rams, Stafford, 25 for 34, 279 yards, 4 touchdowns. He torched our secondary. We did pick him off, though. Okay, we got 1 pick. There's a win, if you will. Kyren Williams, 23 rushes, 97 yards. He is just so crafty, so talented. Also had 5 catches for 19 yards, one of which was a touchdown. Puka gets 7 grabs for 106 yards. Kupp, 5 catches, 51 yards, and a touchdown. Like I said, DeMarcus Robinson, 2 catches, 35 yards. Both those catches were for touchdowns. There is nothing to be mad about there. Rams, after this one, they will be sitting at 3-4, bottom of the NFC West, but they're on a 2-game win streak now. Okay, they're working out of that hole they got themselves into at 1-4, and now they're back to 3-4. So Rams, season isn't completely over, still got some work to do. Vikings go from the best team in the league to now third in the NFC North with a 5-2 record, which is just unfortunate. We still have a plus 51 point differential. I do want to throw that out there. But man, 2-game losing streak now, it really does suck, it really does hurt, but I do not doubt my Minnesota Vikings will be back and hungry for blood. Hungry for blood. We're coming for the league, I'm telling you. It is game over for the NFL. Following Thursday's fiasco, we get into NFL Sunday, and the action was palpable. It was everywhere. Action, action, galore. We kick things off with the Jets and the Patriots, and I don't know what's going on in New York, but the Patriots win 25-22. Holy cow. Patriots beat the Jets. Insane. That was not supposed to happen. That was not on anyone's bingo card, okay? Utterly insane, okay? But for the Jets, Aaron Rodgers, 17.32. Top fantasy performer. Garrett Wilson, 16.3. Tyler Conklin, 13.2. Just average. Just average is all I have to say. For the Patriots, Ramondre Stevenson, 23.5. Looking like a star. Sometimes he's off. Now, this game he was on. Drake May, 11.52 before he got injured, sadly, leaving the game after taking a big hit. And Hunter Henry had 9.5. This game was competitive from the get-go. Drake May running in a touchdown. Ramondre Stevenson running in multiple touchdowns, including a game winner with 22 seconds left. And then instead of kicking the extra point, they went for 2, and Jacoby Brissett tossed it to Ramondre Stevenson. Excellent performance there. Other than that, I mean, just nothing much for the Jets. 233 yards, 2 touchdowns from Rodgers. He was a stud. Breece Hall, 80 yards, was held in check. It was actually the rookie Braden Allen, who ran in the 1 touchdown on the ground. Garrett Wilson, 5 catches, 113 yards. Devontae, 4 catches, 54 yards. Conklin caught pass. And Xavier Gibson, 1 catch, 1 yard, 1 touchdown. Pretty concurrent stat line for him there. As for the Patriots, Jacoby Brissett, 132 yards for him through the air. He was taking over duties, but this was done on the ground. Okay, Ramondre Stevenson, 20 rushes, punched in 2 tutties. Other than that, really not much. Hunter Henry, 5 catches, 45 yards, probably the best wide receiver out there. A good win for the Pats. This one definitely surprising me. 2-6 now. They're third in the AFC East. Jets are also 2-6. They're bottom of the AFC East. And the AFC East is just being ran away with by the Bills. It's kind of getting to a crazy point now where they are 4 games ahead of everyone. So it's funny enough. But the Pats, man, minus 73 point differential. They did get a win, though. They did get a win. So we'll give them that. Jets, minus 20 point differential. 5-game losing streak. I don't know if they're ever going to win again. They keep losing close games. It's actually getting kind of ridiculous for them. You know, they lose by three this week. They don't even score in the second half last week. Lose by three the week before. Lose by six the week before. Lose by one the week before. It's abysmal. Abysmal stuff from the Jets. I would expect nothing more than someone to get fired. Something's going to happen with the Jets. Some change has to be made. Eagles and Bengals was the next matchup on deck, and Jalen Hurts, you sexy, sexy boy, went off. I mean, holy cow. 35.14 fantasy points for Jalen Hurts as the Eagles went 37-17. Devontae Smith had 20.5, and Jake Elliott, 15 fantasy points. He was doing good, too. Ja'Marr Chase, 20 bomb for him. Joe Burrow, 12.86, and Mike Gesicki, 12.3. Bengals just, I mean, you know, they start the game off with a touchdown from Ja'Marr. They then go into halftime tied at 10-10. Then Jalen Hurts touchdown, Jalen Hurts passing touchdown, Jake Elliott field goal, Jalen Hurts touchdown, Jake Elliott field goal. They just couldn't do anything in the second half, and they got outscored 13-0 in the fourth quarter. Nothing was doing it. Jalen Hurts, man, 236 yards, 16 for 21 touchdown, rushed in three touchdowns, looking like the stud that he always is. Saquon Barkley, 108 yards rushing on the ground, not too shabby. Devontae Smith, 6 catches, 85 yards and a tutty. A.J. Brown, 5 catches, 84 yards. This is an Eagles team that looked damn good. Okay, this is an Eagles team that is now 5-2, 3-game win streak, second in the NFC East, and looks far superior to the Giants and Cowboys. All right, the Commanders will prove to be a tough opponent for them this year, but I do think this Eagles team is much better than those early game two losses led them on to be. As for the Bengals, I know, you know, Joe Burrow, 234 yards, touchdown, a pick, average. Just average. Chase Brown, 12 rushes, 32 yards and a touchdown. Didn't do much. Ja'Marr had 9 catches, 54 yards and a touchdown, was held in check. They didn't have T. Higgins, which did hurt them. Mike Gesicki, the most receiving yards with 73. Bengals are now 3-5, 0-4 at home, which is really embarrassing to not win, have won a single game at home and you're 8 games into the year. I don't know. Bengals, this is just not their year. All right. You're in a division with the Ravens and Steelers, who are both heavy hitters, especially when you play them. I think the Bengals might have to take the back burner this year. Tough game played for the Packers as they took on the Jaguars. They win 30-27 on a game-winning field goal, but man, Jaguars 2-6. Okay, the record doesn't do them due diligence to how hard they actually play at times, and they played super hard here against the Packers. But Packers come out on top, 6-2, second in the NFC North. They're balling, plus 46 point differential, 4-game win streak too. Might add that as well. Josh Jacobs, 25.5 fantasy points. Tucker Kraft, 16.8. And Brandon McManus, the kicker against his former team, the Jags, 12 fantasy points. T-Law had 23.32. My favorite rookie wide receiver, Brian Thomas Jr., at 15, but he got hurt. He got hurt at the end of the game. It was not good. Evan Ingram had 13.6. Tank Bigsby did not do enough. Did not do as much as I needed him to do. No scoring in the first quarter led to a absolute barrage of points, 13-10. You had 23 points total scored in the second quarter, touchdown from each team in the third, and I mean, just sadly, the Jaguars played their hearts out, scored a touchdown with under 2 minutes, but Brandon McManus got set up for a chippy 24-yard field goal, and that was that Packers escape with the win. Jordan Love, 196 yards and a pick. He got injured in this game. Malik Willis comes in, throws for 56 yards, runs in a touchdown. He was balling. He was balling. He passed for a touchdown. I think it was deep ball, actually, to Tucker Kraft, if I'm thinking by memory. Yeah, Tucker Kraft, 3 catches, 78 yards. He was looking damn good. Romeo Doubs, 3 catches, 72 yards. He was also doing pretty good. Christian Watson, 4 catches, 39 yards, but I do believe he got hurt again, unfortunately. But this team was literally picked up and put on the back of Josh Jacobs. 25 rushes, 127 yards, 2 touchdowns. What more could you ask for? What more could you ask for from Josh Jacobs? Proving to be the asset that people thought he was going to be. Good stuff for the Packers. As much as I hate him, I do got to give him some credit. So good job to the Packers. Jaguars, put up the bootstraps, man. It ain't over yet. It ain't over yet. The playoffs are still possible. They're still possible. And for this Jaguars team, you know, they're in the AFC South. Okay, they're 2-6. Titans are 1-6. They're better than the Titans. Colts are still 2 games ahead of them. You can catch this Colts team. Now, the Texans, you know, you're 4 games back. They're probably a better team than you, but I just, you know, if you put it together, guys, if you put it together, you can get it done. Speaking of the Titans, their reason they're 1-6 and have a minus 96 point differential, and that's because they can't win a freaking game to save their life. Three-game losing streak now as they're blown out 52-14 by the Lions. Lions are currently the second-best team in the league. Holy cow, they have a plus 100 point differential. Five-game win streak, 6-1. They're terrifying. They're absolutely terrifying. For the Titans, 22.6 fantasy points to Calvin Ridley is the best for the team. Mason Rudolph, 19.54, pretty good. Tony Pollard, 14.7. It was expected. His line was 14.6, so they completely nailed this. And as for the Lions, you know, Jahmyr Gibbs, 20.3. Sam Laporta, 16.8. Jared Goff, 15.5. This was a team effort from the Lions, okay? Start off the game, David Montgomery, touchdown pass. Then Mason Rudolph ran in a touchdown. Then Jahmyr Gibbs, 70-yard run. After that, Nick Westbrook-Aiki, 5-yard pass for Mason Rudolph, and it was all 14-14. Then Brock Wright caught a touchdown pass. Then Amon-Ra caught a touchdown pass. Then Sam Laporta caught a touchdown pass from David Montgomery, heading into halftime, 35-14. We get into the third quarter, Khalif Raymond, 90-yard punt return. After that, Khalif Raymond, touchdown pass from Jared Goff. Then Jake Bates hits a 51-yard field goal, and just every single starter was benched in the fourth, and it was just, let's get out of here. I mean, Tennessee, Mason Rudolph, 266 yards, one touchdown, two picks. He was trying, okay? Pollard, 20 rushes, 94 yards. He was tried, but I mean, the Lions defense just too good. Calvin Ridley, 10 catches, 143 yards. He had a good game. Westbrook-Aiki caught the only touchdown pass of the day, trying their hardest. Before Detroit, I mean, it was getting silly. It was just getting to a silly point. Jared Goff, 12 for 15, 85 yards, 3 touchdowns. I mean, come on. You're just goofing around at that point. I mean, they scored 52 points and barely ran any plays. Jahmyr Gibbs, 11 rushes, 127 yards, touchdown. Dave Montgomery, 9 rushes, 33 yards, touchdown. Receiving-wise, Sam Laporta, 6 catches, 1 was a tutty. Khalif Raymond, 2 catches, 1 was a tutty. Amon-Ra St. Brown, 2 catches, 1 was a tutty. Brock Wright, 1 catch, 1 tutty. I mean, just a team effort, team domination. Lions, 52-14. Oh, man. The Vikings played them close. The Vikings are one of the only teams to play them close all year, okay? We're good. We'll be back. The Minnesota Vikings will be back to beat you, Detroit Lions. Mark my words. Sadly, this was the final matchup of the regular season for the Falcons and Buccaneers, and they put on another barn burner back-to-back games they've had this year. Absolutely amazing. Kirk Cousins in the 31-26 victory, 28.64 fantasy points. Holy cow. Kyle Pitts, 25. Bijan, 22. Ballin. Sadly, they were matched by 29 fantasy points from Cade Otton, the tight end for the Buccaneers. Baker Mayfield, 22.3. No surprise. And Rashad White, 15.7. Not too bad. Rashad actually just traded him away. So that's what I get for trading him. Competitive game from the get-go, and it was National Tight End Day. And Kyle Pitts and Cade Otton decide to show out, each catching 2 touchdowns. Turco Chains, 276 yards, 4 touchdowns. Insane. Mooney went for 5 catches, 92 yards and a touchdown. Pitts had 4 catches, 91 yards for 2 touchdowns. And Bijan, 6 catches, one of which was a touchdown. Drake London, 4 catches, 34 yards. Took kind of an off day today. Bijan, 13 rushes, 63 yards. Allgeier, 12 rushes, 33 yards. This was done through the year. Falcons dominate, 5-3 now. Head of the NFC South, 3-0 on the road this year. Not too bad. As for the Buccaneers, 4-4 now, second in the NFC South, 2-game losing streak. It's unfortunate. Baker, 330 yards, 37 for 50, 3 touchdowns, 2 picks. Trying his hardest. Rushed 3 times, too, for 11 yards. Cade Otton, 9 catches, 81 yards for 2 touchdowns was amazing. Bucky Irving, 7 catches, 40 yards. Rashad White caught a touchdown. But without Chris Godwin, without Mike Evans, this Buccaneers team, it's probably going to start to dip, sadly. I hate to see it, but, that's just what happens. Following that, we stay in that region of Florida, but instead we head over to Miami as the Cardinals visited the Dolphins, and the Cardinals pull off the upset. I think we called it. if I'm not mistaken, we called the Cardinals winning here, which was absolutely crazy. Cardinals, now 4-4, are in a three-way tie in the NFC West. They do hold tiebreakers, so being 4-4, they are the top team in the NFC West. But them, the 49ers and Seahawks, all 4-4. Two-game win streak now for the Cardinals. Looking pretty good, trying to get out of this pretty bad point differential. Good win for them. As for the Dolphins, it has now been two straight losses. 2-5 record on the year. Not too hot. Second in the AFC East, though. That's how bad the AFC East is. Marvin Harrison Jr. in the 28-27 win, 23.1 fantasy points. Kyler Murray, 22.18. And Trey McBride on National Tight End Day, 21.4. A lot of 20-point bombs from them. Devin Achane, 26.7. Raheem Mostert, 16. Tua Tagovailoa in his return game, 14.66. This was the Dolphins game to lose, guys. You know, they're going into the final 10 minutes of the game up 27. I'm not up 27 points. They were up 27 to, gosh, I can't even find it. What were they at? They were up 27 to 18 is what it was. For James Conner got a touchdown, and then Chad Ryland hits a game-winning 34-yard field goal to send the Miami home fans home, sadly. Unfortunate for them. Honestly, I don't really care, though. Not the biggest Dolphins fan. Kyler Murray, 307 yards, two touchdowns. James Conner, 20 rushes, 53 yards, and a touchdown. Trey McBride, 9 catches, 124 yards. Marvin Harrison, 6 catches, 111 yards, got a tutty. And don't forget about Wilson. Who's Wilson? Who is Wilson? I don't even know who Wilson is. Michael Wilson, that's who he is. He caught a touchdown. Good for him. The Cardinals, good for you. You got some work to do. Dolphins, Tua, 234 yards and a touchdown. Just not enough. Achane did all the work on the ground with 97 yards. Mostert had 2 touchdowns. But Achane did have 6 catches, 50 yards. 450 yards and a touchdown. Tyreek Hill, 6 catches, 72 yards. Waddle, 4 catches, 45 yards. This Dolphins team has just lost all their mojo from last year. Cardinals kind of have some mojo. Cardinals do low-key have some mojo. I do got to give them that. Ravens and Browns was the next matchup, 29-24. Browns beat the Ravens in a huge upset. Ravens' first loss since being on a 5-game winning streak. Browns 2-6, second win of the year. Lamar, 24.16 fantasy points. Zay Flowers on my bench, 18.5. And Derrick Henry, 14.7. Cedric Tillman, 28.9 fantasy points. Get out of town. Jameis Winston, 23.56. And David Njoku on National Tight End Day, 17.1 dogs. That's all I got to say. Competitive game from the get-go. I mean, Dustin Hopkins was kicking field goals. Justin Tucker was catching field goals. Lamar was throwing tutties. Jameis Winston was throwing tutties. But with 59 seconds left, Cedric Tillman would catch a 38-yard pass. And then Browns D would just come up massive in that final minute, not allowing any passes to be completed. Great work. Great work from Cleveland. Lamar, 289 yards, 2 touchdowns, rushed for 46 yards. Typical Lamar day. Derrick Henry, 73 yards rushing for a tutty. Did we need to? Zay Flowers, 7 catches, 150 yards. I don't know why I benched him. Kind of sad I did. Andrews caught a touchdown. Eglar caught a touchdown. Isaiah Likely had 47 yards receiving. Good for him. Jameis Winston, proving to be the reliable option. Pay him the big bucks, not Deshaun Watson. 334 yards and 3 touchdowns. He played his heart out. Love to see it. Nick Chubb, 52 yards rushing. Just doesn't look like the same old Nick Chubb. Cedric Tillman, 7 catches, 99 yards and 2 touchdowns. David Njoku, 5 catches, 61 yards and a touchdown. And Jerry Jeudy, 5 catches, 79 yards. Looking pretty good. Good for them. Browns got a lot of work to do to get out of this hole you're in, but I think Jameis can give the spirit that this team needs. You know, 138 points for one of the worst offenses in the league. Ravens, 242 points for one of the best offenses in the league. Sadly, you know, you lose here. Tough divisional game, but good win for the Browns. Following that, I think this was our final 3:30 game. I think it was Colts and Texans, as the Texans win 23-20, doing what they needed to do. Good stuff there. Josh Downs, 22.2 fantasy points. Jonathan Taylor, 18.7. Anthony Richardson, 11.5. Joe Mixon for the Texans, 23.4. Tank Dell, 13.5. And Stephon Diggs, 12.7. Competitive from the get-go. I mean, Richardson, 175 yards, touchdown and a pick. Not his strongest day. Not really. His injury has really hindered his abilities. Jonathan Taylor, 20 rushes, 105 yards and a touchdown, doing what he needs to do. Downs, 4 catches, 109 yards, and a touchdown. He was a stud, but I mean, you know, of the 10 passes, Anthony Richardson goes 10 of 32, Four went to Downs for those completions. The other six went to six different wide receivers. Michael Pittman Jr., only one catch. Insane. C.J. Stroud, on the other hand, 285 yards and a touchdown. Not a monster fantasy-wise at all, but he's a good quarterback. Joe Mixon, 25 rushes, 102 yards and a touchdown. Leads the day. Stephon Diggs, 5 catches, 81 yards. Tank Dell caught the only touchdown through the air for this Texans team. Kymie Fairbairn was putting in a lot of work. A lot of work. As we look at the AFC South, Texans are 6-2. Colts are 4-4. Texans are looking to be the best team. 4-0 at home, too, might I add. Looking mighty good. Colts, get back to home. You're 3-1, much better than your 1-3 road record. And they might have a bye weekend coming up. I think they could really benefit from a bye. Getting into our 3:30 game, Saints visit the Chargers, and they lose 26-8. Abysmal. Chargers 4-3 now. They are third in the AFC West and have only given up 91 points so far this year. They are the only defense in the entire league to have not given up 100 points yet. Good job, Chargers defense. Actually, very, very good job from this Chargers team. Not much is expected of them. But then again, the Saints do suck really bad. 2-6. They are on a six-game losing streak. Yeah, they start out 2-0, yet to win since. Saints, pathetic. Pathetic. That's all I got to say. Not to be mean, but to be mean. Chris Olave, 18.7 fantasy points. Alvin Kamara, 18.2. Those are the only two that got into double digits. Ladd McConkey, the rookie for the Chargers, 29.1 fantasy points. Are you freaking kidding me? Kid went off. Herbert gets 24 and J.K. Dobbins, 16.8. Look, all right, Taysom Hill safety in the first quarter. Blake Grupp field goal in the second. Blake Grupp field goal in the third. That's all they had to offer. Ladd McConkey, 2 touchdowns. J.K. got a touchdown. And Cameron Dicker was kicking some field goals. Spencer Rattler goes 12 of 24 for 156 yards. They bench him. In comes Hayner, 9 of 17, 122 yards. Taysom Hill got one snap, you know, at quarterback. That was it. Kamara, 10 rushes, 67 yards. Olave's 8 catches, 107 yards was really the only highlight. This Saints team has completely fallen off since losing Derek Carr. Herbert, 279 yards and 2 touchdowns. Looked like a great quarterback out there today. J.K. goes for 57 yards and a touchdown. But Ladd McConkey, man, 6 catches, 111 yards, 2 touchdowns. He was such a dot out there. Love to see it. Good stuff for the Chargers. And, I mean, you got to string wins together. You really got to string wins together. And hey, you know, a lot of people are expecting the run game with Harbaugh, but he likes to spice it up through the air. Ladd McConkey, Justin Herbert, good work, fellas. Following that, Bills visit the Seahawks, and this one surprised me. I honestly thought the Seahawks would win this one, but no, sir. Seahawks fall to 4-4. They are still tied for the top of the NFC West. That's how bad they are. But the Bills, 6-2, one of the best teams in the league, 3-game win streak. They're looking pretty dang nasty. They have almost plus 100-point differential. It's in the plus 80s. Bills in their 31-10 win. James Cook, 28.3 fantasy points. Khalil Shakir, 19.9. Josh Allen, 19.82. For the Seahawks, Jackson Smith and Jigba, 12.9. The only good player. Only good player for them today. Charbonnet got in a touchdown late in the fourth quarter. Other than that, they were outscored 31-3 the majority of the game. Kincaid caught a tutty. Keon Coleman caught a tutty. Cook ran in for 2 tutties. That's what they needed to do. Josh Allen, 283 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a pick. Cook, 111 yards with those 2 touchdowns. Pretty good. Shakir, 9 catches, 107 yards. Keon Coleman, 5 catches, 7 yards with that touchdown. And Kincaid, 4 catches, 31 yards, and a touchdown. Amari Cooper, only 1 catch for 3 yards. They don't really need him. For Seattle, Geno Smith, 212 yards and an interception. Average rushing game-wise. I mean, total rushing yards the whole game, 42. That's not going to do it. Jackson Smith and Jigba, 6 catches, 68 yards, was the best player for them. And couldn't do nothing. Tough loss for the Seahawks, but this Bills team proving that we don't need Stephon Diggs. We don't need anyone. We're the Buffalo Bills. We can get wins when we need to. After that, one of the most entertaining games of the week. Utterly insane ending in the Commanders-Bears game. I mean, holy cow. Commanders win on a game-winning Hail Mary, 18-15. Insane. DeAndre Swift, 18.9 fantasy points. The only high spot for the Chicago team. For the Commanders, Jaden Daniels, 22.24. Terry McLaurin, 17.5. And Noah Brown, 16.3. Going through the game, you know, it starts off 9-0 at halftime. Bears haven't even scored. Then DeAndre Swift, 56-yard touchdown. Rashawn Johnson, 1-yard touchdown. And suddenly, you know, it goes to 15-12 out of nowhere. Kalen Williams got a 2-point conversion to Cole Kmet. Then with time expiring, nothing to do, Jaden Daniels sends up a 52-yard prayer and it gets swatted down by a Bears player and it is swatted right into the hands of Noel Brown. Noel Brown is standing behind the Hail Mary pile and the ball just falls into his lap. Literally, it just falls into his lap. He casually turns around. It's just going like, yeah, yeah, that's what's up. That's what's up. It was insane because I didn't even know it was a Hail Mary. And I'm watching. I'm like, you got to be freaking kidding. Because I was driving home when this game was coming to an end. Insane ending for the Commanders. This Commanders team is now 6-2, the best team in the NFC East. 2-game win streak. I mean, 4-0 at home. Jaden Daniels trying to have an MVP rookie year. We'll have to see. Insane stuff. Caleb Williams, 131 yards. Just not going to cut it. Not going to cut it. DeAndre Swift, 129 yards and a touchdown. He's a stud. Romo Odunze only got 3 catches, 41 yards. Keenan Allen, only 2 catches, 39 yards. So DJ Moore, only 2 catches, 27 yards. Cole Kmet, only 1 catch for 14 yards. The Bears offense was held in check. Jaden Daniels feasted. 326 yards, touchdown. Brian Robinson Jr., 16 rushes, 65 yards. Zach Ertz on national TD day, 7 catches, 77 yards. Scary Terry, 5 catches, 125. And Noah Brown, 3 catches the whole game for that 52-yard Hail Mary. That was the sucker. I mean, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me, Commanders? Great win. They've been looking amazing. As for the Bears, 4-3, bottom of the NFC North. They're a good team. They're a good team. But the Bears have lost 3 games this year. They've all been on the road. Bears yet to win at on the road that they are undefeated at home. Good stuff so far. They still have a good defense. The offense just is hit or miss, as we've seen so far this year. Second to last 3:30 game, Panthers visit the Broncos. And I mean, if you'd have told me, hey, who's scoring first in this game, I'd probably say the Panthers. Because that's what they always seem to do. The Panthers start off the game 7-0 in the first quarter with an Xavier Leggett touchdown from Bryce Young. After that, they gave up 3 touchdowns in the second, 1 in the third, and then they got a gimme with 18 seconds left to only lose 28-14. Just abysmal. Just abysmal. I mean, just, oh my goodness. This Panthers team, 1-7, the worst team in the league. They have a minus. I'm going to try and do some quick math here. They have a minus, I believe, 57-point differential. It's rough. 5-game losing streak officially. Holy cow, this Panthers team is bad. Very, very bad. As for the Broncos, 5-3, second in the AFC East. 2-game win streak. They've been playing some good football. Plus 53-point differential. This is a good Broncos team. Their defense is sound. Their offense is clicking. I like what I see. Carolina, Bryce Young, 224 yards, 2 touchdowns and 2 picks. He didn't look awful. You know, I've seen Bryce Young play much worse. Chuba Hubbard, 15 rushes, 56 yards. Not going to get it done. Not going to get it done. Other than that, you know, no Deontay Johnson, no Adam Thielen. This team is just, yeah, just throw up. But hey, live in Carolina. Cool city. Bo Nix for the Broncos, 284 yards and 3 touchdowns. They are, oh my gosh, he is proven to be one of the better quarterbacks drafted. He had a rough start. He is turning it around very, very well. Cortland Sutton, 8 catches, 100 yards. Good job, Cortland. Finally having a breakthrough game. Troutman, the tight end, caught a touchdown. He had to. It was National Tight End Day. He had to. And by the way, the other tight end, Adkins, he caught a touchdown. You know, on National Tight End Day, they're showing the tight ends love. Broncos, 20-14. This is just no surprise to me. Good job for the Broncos. Panthers, it's far and few when they get a win. Final 3:30 game for you guys. They do it again. They freaking do it again. The Chiefs win 27-20 and escape with another win. They're 7-0, undefeated, plus 50-point differential. Just SMH, all I got to say. Raiders, 2-6, 4-game losing streak, near and a minus 100-point differential. This team is just in disarray. Disarray. Chiefs, I'll tell you why they won. They actually passed to their tight end. How is it National Tight End Day? And Brock Bowers is finally held in check. How does that work? How does that work? Chiefs, Travis Kelce, 25 fantasy points. He went off. Patty Batty, 18.18. Xavier Worthy, 13.7. For the Raiders, Jacoby Myers, 17.2. Gardner, 14.96. They played him hard, though. Okay, I'll give you that. They played him hard. It was 7-7 after the first. It was 10-17 at halftime. went to 13-17, went 20-13, then actually went 27-13. DJ Turner would catch a touchdown with 2 minutes left, and the Chiefs just wouldn't turn the ball back over. Great work for this Chiefs team. Their defense is sound. Patrick Mahomes, 262 yards, 2 touchdowns, another pick for Patrick Mahomes. Kareem Hunt, 21 rushes, 59 yards, and a touchdown. Not too bad. Travis Kelce, 10 catches, 90 yards, and a touchdown. That'll do it. And Xavier Worthy, 4 catches, 37 yards, and 1 touchdown. Good work for them. For the Raiders, Gardner, 209 yards and 2 touchdowns. Better than last week. Madison, 14 rushes, 15 yards. Held in check. Brock Bowers, 5 catches, 58 yards. Dang it. Dang it. Brock Bowers is the only person I care about on this Raiders team, and they weren't passing to him. Son of a gun. I mean, just goodness me. Chiefs, 7-0 to start off the year. The only undefeated team. The best team in the league. Someone needs to beat them. Someone needs to beat the Chiefs. I mean, what's their schedule looking like? They play the Bucks. Probably going to win that. Play the Broncos. Honestly, I think the Broncos are going to surprise them this year. Okay? They haven't played the Broncos yet. They might surprise them. Bills, November 17th. That's going to be another good game. They play the Panthers. Maybe the Panthers will be the team to finally beat the Chiefs. That would be amazing. Play the Raiders again, probably win that. Play the Chargers again, probably win that. Play the Browns, probably win that. Play the Texans, that'll be a competitive game. That's right before Christmas. On Christmas Day, they play the Steelers. This is insane. Okay, this is absolutely insane, guys. December 21st, okay, is a Sunday. They play the Texans. They have them playing then that's a Saturday. 4 days later, they play the Steelers. So they're trying to set up the Chiefs for a little bit of failure towards the end of the year. But it'll be tough to come by. Tough to come by. Good win for the Chiefs. You do got to give them credit. Do got to give them credit. Raiders, nothing's expected of them. After that, we got to Sunday Night Football, and the 49ers win over the Cowboys 30-24. 49ers are now 4-4, second in the NFC West, but technically tied for first. Cowboys are 3-4. And just are abysmal. They're just only put up 150 points so far this year. CeeDee Lamb, CeeDee Lamb needs a team, okay? Because CeeDee Lamb is one of the best players and one of the best wide receivers of all time. 39.6 fantasy points. Are you freaking kidding me? Insane. Dak Prescott, 13.62, mid. Brock Purdy, 26. He did good. George Kittle, 24.8. National tight end day. You knew he's going to be good. And Mason, leaving early, in comes Garendo, 19.2 fantasy points. Starting off the game, you know, it was pretty even. We're going into half. It's 10-6, and the Cowboys are winning, okay? Third quarter, 21 unanswered. 21 answered. George Kittle touchdown. Isaac Rando touchdown. Brock Purdy touchdown. That was that. CeeDee Lamb would catch two more, and then with some miracle, with under 2 minutes left, the Cowboys would get the ball back, and they go 0-4. 0-4 on passes. Couldn't even get a first down. It was pathetic to see. Dak Prescott, 243 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 2 picks, mid. Ezekiel Elliott, 10 rushes, 34 yards, a touchdown, mid. CeeDee Lamb, 13 catches, 146 yards, 2 touchdowns. CeeDee Lamb is so freaking good. Just round of applause. Round of applause real quick to CeeDee Lamb. I got to break the soundboard back out for this. I mean, this kid's talented. This kid's talented. Other than that, everyone else on this Cowboys team atrocious, especially their defense. Their defense is not good. Brock Purdy, 260 yards and a touchdown, did what he needed to do, including rushing 8 times for 56 yards and a touchdown. Garendo, 14 rushes, 85 yards and a touchdown. Good stuff for them. Kittle, 6 catches, 128 yards and a tutty. Debo, 4 catches, 71 yards. Ricky Purcell, 4 catches, 38 yards. Doing what they need to do. 49ers getting back in the win column. You love to see it if you're a 49ers fan. As a Vikings fan, I could care less. Cowboys really got to assess what's going on with your team. You know, 0-3 at home. I mean, they're 3-1 on the road. That's pretty comical. They'll have an interesting matchup coming at you next week with the Falcons. You know, I don't know if that's much of a winnable game, so we'll have to see the state of their team there. But the 49ers, I think this team is so good. It's like every time I watch the 49ers, they're playing this great football. And then whenever I don't watch them, it's like, oh, they check in and they lost. But they play the Buccaneers next week. I think that will be a very good matchup. I do think so, but I mean, there's just been so many injuries this season. You never know what's going to happen to teams once they get injured. It sucks to see, really. It really sucks to see all these guys getting injured, going out, and completely changing the landscape for their team. So we'll see what happens in the coming weeks. But that's your NFL Week 8 recap. Holy cow, that went on longer than I expected. Before we talk about UFC 308, there is something that we do need to talk about, and that is the top 10 new things in pop culture. That is right, every week, every episode, I should better say, we look at the top 10 new things in pop culture, courtesy of Discussing Film. A lot of interesting stuff always coming at you. Let's check it out. First off, Joker 2 is releasing on digital tomorrow, only 3 weeks after the film's theatrical release. You know how freaking bad that is? Okay, I want you to know that Deadpool Wolverine took months for that to come out. They ran in the theaters for so long. Joker 2 is just in there. And it's already coming out on digital because they're going to try and make some money off it. I've heard it sucks. I've heard it just ruins the first film. It's abysmal. That's all I hear from. So why should I go see a movie in the theater if it's so bad? And everyone's kind of like, you know, that's true. So we'll just send it on digital and try and make some money off it. I don't know. I really have no interest in Joker at all, but hey, maybe it's good. I never saw the first one, though. I do want to add that. Number two, Alan Ritchson and Amber Midthunder have been cast in the action thriller Painter. The film follows a young woman trained from a young age who must employ every skill to rescue her father after he is kidnapped. It is written by the John Wick director, Derek Kolstad. So, of course, Alan Ritchson, if no one knows, Thad Castle from Blue Mountain State. How about this Reacher from Jack Reacher? He plays Jack Reacher. And as for Amber Midthunder, she was in the latest, Predator movie. She was the Native American girl fighting the Predator in prehistoric times, whatever you want to call it. I'm a big fan of Alan Ritchson as an actor. I find him hilarious. I find him badass. I'd maybe give this film a shot. And hey, it's directed by the same people who directed John Wick. That's fire. Number three, Christopher Lee will return as Saruman in Lord of the Rings, War of the Rohirrim. The film uses archival recordings of Christopher Lee doing line readings from the Hobbit films. Interesting. Very interesting. Is Christopher Lee still with us? I don't know. I think he might have passed on, so we'll have to see. Very interesting. Number four, Terrifier 3 has passed 50 million worldwide. It is now the highest grossing unrated movie of all time. Yeah, it's so gory. It's not even an R rating. It's just not safe to watch. Like, it just doesn't even have a rating. Terrifier 3, interesting movie. There's an audience for it. I'm not that audience. I'm just not that audience. So I will stay away from that. But good for the entire team. Number five. Cillian Murphy says he hopes his recent Oscar win will help him to tell more Irish stories in cinema. There's certainly no shortage of literary work in Ireland to adapt for film. We are so lucky in Ireland, it's extraordinary. Oh, Cillian Murphy. I didn't know he was Irish. Good for him. Irish, all I think of is Conor McGregor. But Cillian Murphy, I still do need to watch Peaky Blinders, but I'll give him a benefit of that. Number six, Jack Schaefer says there's no death and Thanos connections established in Agatha all along. Thanos stands out there. I have no answers for you. Oh, Stan, so like people support him. Never watched Agatha all along. I had no interest in it. But Thanos, I do love me a little Thanos. I mean, I hope Thanos comes back. I bet they are going to bring Thanos back for some of the Avengers films just because they got him. They definitely just got him. Number six. Number six, Hugh Grant, when asked if he carries darker roles in his mind for a long time, he says, I killed three people this afternoon. I feel awful about that. Hugh Grant, I believe, plays a serial killer in an upcoming film. Why would you ask an actor, hey, do you carry darker thoughts with you? You have to play an actor and kill people. That's weird. Number seven, Venom the Last Dance opens with $175 million worldwide, the lowest opening of the trilogy. I've heard it's an okay film. That's all I've heard. And I've watched the first two Venoms. They're okay films. I would expect nothing more from the third one. But I give the benefit of the doubt. I feel like it would be a decent film of some regard. I don't really know, though. I've never seen it. But, I mean, I'll have to give it a shot. Why not? Maybe I'll go see it once it comes out on DVD. Number eight, John Lithgow wants to return as Lord Farquaad in Shrek 5. I still gotta wait until July of 2026 for Shrek 5, but it's gonna be worth it so much. I hope John Lithgow is still around to give us a voice for Lord Farquaad. Shrek movies, the best of all time. Recent set photos of Pedro Pascal in Gladiator 2 show him in a white robe and basically gladiator outfit. He looks freaking pimp. Okay, he looks pimp. Gladiator 2 has had an insane budget and insane cast, and I'm so pumped to see it. I'm really excited for him. Pedro Pascal looking good in it, very, very much so. Bum. Number nine. Are we on number nine? A lot of stuff about Venom, The Last Dance, you know, kind of the ratings about it. Nothing really much. They're just plugging DVDs and stuff. Gosh, not really anything, guys. I'm trying to find something to round out our top 10. Here you go. Number 9, the Secret Predator film is reportedly an animated anthology film. The film will follow three stories of predators fighting warriors in different eras, potentially including samurais and pirates. Now, that sounds interesting. That's what I'm here for, but one issue with the Predator films is that I know it's going to end. It's either going to end with the Predator killing them or the good guys winning. I mean, I need a shock factor. That's what I need. Finally, number 10, here we go. Upcoming MCU films. That's how we'll round out our top 10 new things in pop culture. Captain America 4 comes out in February of next year. The Thunderbolts comes out in May. The Fantastic Four comes out in July. Then we take a year off until May of 2026 when Avengers Doomsday comes out. After that, in July, Spider-Man 4 comes out. Then finally, in 2027, you get Avengers Secret War. So you're going to have to wait quite a long time to watch any new Marvel movies. But honestly, I think it's good. In this lineup, I would go to the theater for all of these films. I don't know about the Captain America movie. That's just not really for me. Thunderbolts, maybe, probably not. But I mean, those Avengers movies, the Fantastic Four, the Spider-Man, those are the ones that pique my interest and make me actually want to go to the theater and check them out. But those are your top 10 new things in pop culture. You know, there's been a lot of stuff going on with the election. I keep seeing these actors come out and support Kamala Harris, and it's just been kind of cringy. You know, it's so fake. It's so fake. I feel like they have dirt on them all. So maybe we'll stay away from pop culture next episode. Probably not. We'll have to see, though. But, guys, let's get into the main event, the big shebang of today's episode, your UFC 308 recap of all the action. I've been so pumped to go over it. Let's get right on into it. Kicking off the card. I mean, I don't want to say we didn't kick off the card with a bang. I mean, it's not like we didn't kick it off with a bang. I mean, you know, it started kind of slow. It took us a while to get into the evening. I will say the main card was the cream of the crop, but we kick things off. Renat Fakhretdinov, Carlos Leal, no surprise. No surprise here that Renat Fakhretdinov won this fight, but I didn't watch it. I was not surprised to see that he won. I check it. I'm like, okay, Renat Fakhretdinov, 23-1-1 now. He's on a 19-fight unbeaten streak or something. Some ridiculous. But apparently this was a robbery. Apparently he lost every round on the verdict scorecard. Now, when we look at the stats from this fight, Renat Fakhretdinov, 109 significant strikes to 107. Total strikes goes to Carlos Leal, 146 to 119. Renat, 2 of 19 on takedowns, 3 minutes, 14 seconds. Carlos Leal goes 1 of 4 for 13 seconds of control time. So I do say that does make me question if he won. But when we look at the stats, round 3, Renat outstruck him 52 to 42. Got taken down once, that was it. Round 3, Carlos Leal outstruck him 37 to 33 and got taken down once. Okay, Renat in round 1, 1 of 7 on takedowns for 2 minutes of control time, got struck by 4 significantly. More total strikes to Carlos Leal. So, robbery this, robbery that. It was a close fight. Renat wins, remains undefeated, essentially, 23-1-1. So far in the UFC, he is 5-0-1, which is pretty good. But is this going to get him a ranked opponent? I honestly don't believe so. I honestly don't think so. You can maybe give him loser of Neil Magny and Carlos Prates. You could give him Vicente Luque. You could give him a wide variety of welterweights, but he's not going to get anywhere near the rankings. As for Carlos Leal, 21-6 professionally. He's only 30 years old. I think he proved himself here against Renat Fakhretdinov, and they're definitely going to be bringing him back for another welterweight matchup. So I'll be interested to see what happens, but apparently this was a robbery. Renat did win, which did make me happy, so that's as far as we'll go. After that, middleweight action, Ishmael Nerudi, Bruno Silva. This was just one where I was like, you know what, I'm going to give Bruno Silva the benefit of the doubt. I should never have given Bruno Silva the benefit of the doubt. He loses all 3 rounds and is definitely getting cut from the UFC. Ishmael, 66 significant strikes to 36, 107 total strikes to 38, goes 3 of 13 on takedowns for 5 minutes, 51 seconds control time, and just beat him every single round. Ishmael Nerudi, First win in the UFC since 2020. He had gone to the independent scene over the last 4 years after being cut. But now 24-7. Good win for him. And Ishmael, you know, only 28 years old. I'm excited to see. I'm excited to see what this brings him, where he goes from here in the middleweight division. You know, there's a lot of options at middleweight. I'll be honest, middleweight is a crowded division. But, I mean, there was a guy who lost earlier. We're going to talk about him, Armin Petrosian. That could be an option, potentially. There's another guy who lost, Bruno Ferreira. We're going to talk about him in a second. That's someone that you could have him fight. You know, Ishmael, there's going to be a lot of middleweight options for him. Yeah, Edmund Shahbazyan, Gerald Meerschaert, you know. So, we'll see what happens with him. As for Bruno Silva, 4-fight losing streak, 1-6 in his last 7. He has just been abysmal. Abysmal. Here's a guy who comes in three straight fights, as we mentioned, knockouts on our last episode. You know, loses to Alex Pereira, loses to Gerald Meerschaert, gets a win over Brad Tavares, and then loses to Brendan Allen, loses to Sharm Magomedov, loses to Chris Weidman. Here's finally a guy who is not a high-level former champion-ranked opponent, and he loses all 3 rounds. So Bruno Silva, you will be cut. You're now 23-12. And I mean, it's just awful. 1-6 in your last 7. Bye-bye. If we look at his entire UFC run, actually, 1-6 is being generous. 1-6 is being generous. He is more, actually, he is 1-6, isn't he? I was looking too far down his record. But, you know, half of his losses have came in the UFC. Time for him to go. So, bye-bye, Bruno Silva. This was, unfortunately, the first fight we picked incorrectly. Back in the crack category, though, with Fareed Bashurat versus Victor Hugo. Fareed remains undefeated. Fareed Bashurat, 13-0 now, 4-0 in the UFC. And he's just a grappler, though. I won't lie, it wasn't entertaining. It was not entertaining, but nonetheless, still a good fighter. Still a good competitive fight, if you will. Victor Hugo, sadly, having his win streak snapped of 13. What was Victor Hugo's? 14 straight wins, wow, sadly snapped, taken down 4 of 7 times, 4 minutes, 37 seconds, just nothing. Might have won round 3, if anything, because he won on, like, significant strikes-wise, or maybe even round 2, I think they might give him round 2, if anything. Actually, round 3 was the most convincing for Fareed, so Victor Hugo sadly loses, and you know, bantamweight. Tons of bantamweights. And for Fareed, same thing. I know he's going to want a ranked opponent, but I don't think there's anything. And this was fought on short notice at featherweight. So actually, does Fareed Bashurat fight at featherweight? Oh my gosh, I think, these guys all fluctuate weight kind of right now. But Fareed Bashurat will remain relevant in that 135-145-pound range. Victor Hugo, I think he'll stick around. But as for anyone of notoriety, probably not. If I'm going to give anyone in the bantamweight rankings, you know, it'd be a Jonathan Martinez, it'd be a Kyler Phillips, a Montel Jackson. So these both guys will stay. Fareed Bashurat, though, definitely looking much closer to the rankings than Victor Hugo is. Following that, heavyweight action. Kennedy Nchuku takes on Chris Barnett. And this was unfortunate because Chris Barnett injured himself, apparently walking up to the octagon or something, hurt something in his leg. Fight gets going and just doesn't even throw anything. Attempts 12 strikes. Kennedy attempts 51. He attempted 74, landed 51 in the 4 minutes and 27 seconds. This fight took place. But Kennedy Nchuku does get it done. And this improves him. This improves his record, man. 13-5 now. 13-5 now for Kennedy. His 9th career knockout. Good win for Kennedy, snapping a 2-fight losing streak. This is exactly what he needed. This is exactly what Kennedy needed, and he got it done. Gets it done. Chris Barnett, sadly, he's been win-loss since forever. He's going to be injured. He's not going to be back for a while. I don't know if Chris Barnett's ever coming back to the UFC. But Kennedy, back in the win column at heavyweight. There's tons of heavyweights out there, let me tell you that. Hell, maybe he fights Rodrigo Nascimento. Actually, and as we look ahead to next week's card, there's a lot of heavyweights. I can't lie. So this was the only heavyweight fight on today's card. But as we look ahead to next weekend, Kennedy, if he's going to stay at heavyweight, you know, Alexander Romanov takes on Rodrigo Nascimento. He could fight the loser of that. You also have Derek Lewis and Hanada Dines. He could fight the loser of that. So there's a lot of options for Kennedy. Sadly, Chris Barnett is no longer going to be with the UFC, in my opinion. But that's just how it goes. Kennedy, good win. Even if he was injured, Kennedy looked pretty sharp in the striking department. Following that, Abus Magomedov beats Bruno Ferreira. I gotta be honest, I was surprised at this. I was surprised at this result. I was going to give this one to Bruno Ferreira, and Abus Magomedov just proving us wrong. And round one gets going. Round one gets going, and Abus outstrikes him 14-2 significantly. Only two significant strikes in that for Bruno Ferreira. Round two, Bruno finally opens it up. 20 significant strikes to 8. Abus has to turn to the grappling, goes 2 of 5 for 2 minutes 14 seconds, and was getting rocked on the feet at some times. Then round three, going at it on the feet, and then Abus lands two takedowns, gets into an arm triangle position from side control, and Abus Magomedov, in the first time in his career, gets a submission victory. Or no, other way around. Bruno Ferreira gets submitted for the first time in his career. Abus Magomedov getting his freaking seventh career submission, just something rare. We haven't seen anything really like that in the UFC so far from Abus. I mean, he debuts, fights Dustin Stolfus, knocks him out in 19 seconds, fights Sean Strickland on the feet, gets basically out everywhere by Kyle Barallo, turned to the grappling last fight. He now leaned on the submission attempts against Bruno Ferreira, and Abus Magomedov, two-fight win streak now. Good win for him, 27-6 record now, doing what he needed to do. Good win, Abus Magomedov. You know, Bruno Ferreira, this one sucks. You know, I do enjoy Bruno Ferreira, but, I mean, this is the first time he'd gone past round one in like 4 years, so this was expected. Still looks sharp on the feet. And Bruno Ferreira, 31 years old, he'll still be around. I mean, 12-2 record, all those fights have not gone the distance. He's entertaining, he'll be back. After going 2-0 to start out 2024, to kind of end it with a loss is kind of unfortunate. But Bruno Ferreira, he'll be back. I don't know if I'm going to give either of these guys ranked opponents, but if I were, I do think, you know, the Chris Curtises, the Michelle Pereiras, those are names that Abus Magomedov could fight. But I don't think either of these guys should be heading anywhere near the rankings. Following that, this would be the final fight we did not predict correctly. And for all the fights to not predict correctly, I'll give it to this one. Matheus Rebeque, Maida Beck, oral bye. I missed it, but I heard it was fight of the century, fight of the year. I heard it was an absolute war as a +210 underdog. Matheus Rebeque gets it done. Tolls from the fight. Matheus Rebeque landed a knockdown in round three. 71 significant strikes to 61 total. 93 total strikes to 85 total. 3 of 4 on takedowns for Matheus. 2 of 5 for Maida Beck, oral bye. Both men getting around 2 minutes of control time each. Entertaining. Scorecards all over the place. You're getting 29-28s, 29-28s. No, everyone had different rounds scoring for them. Entertaining. But round one went to Rebeque, round two to Maida Beck, and you get to round three, and it was just an all-out war. And I'm respect to both these competitors. Respect to both of them. Maida Beck, oral bye. This does snap his winning streak of 8 straight wins, but now you're 13-2. And your only loss in the last like 8 years is to Matheus Rebeque in a fight of the night. Yeah, I'll give him that one. Rebeque, good win after losing in May to Diego Ferreira. And just entertaining. Entertaining in the lightweight division. We love it. This was fought at catchweight, but these are both lightweights. You know, you're going to have a Jalen Turner's out there. You're Benoit St. Denis. There's going to be options for you, Rebeque, and who you fight next. But I mean, entertaining as it comes. And after round one, Maida Beck's eye was super swollen. I mean, it was looking nasty. But then he comes out in round two and he's swinging harder than ever, trying to take his head off. This was a good fight. Good fight for both these gentlemen. Should have been the final prelim, honestly. A little surprised it wasn't. Good work there. After that, welterweight matchup, Jeff Neal, Rafael Dos Anjos, and this was a kind of a sour win for Jeff Neal. Dos Anjos injured his leg, but Jeff Neal technically gets a 90-second TKO, technically the 10th KO of his career, snapping a 2-fight losing streak for Jeff Neal. As for Dos Anjos, oddly enough, this is fifth time in his career he's been finished, but third straight loss now for Dos Anjos. He's 1-4 in his last 5. And as sour as this loss is, I mean, I understand Jeff Neal, didn't injure him. You know, Dos Anjos just kind of injured his leg. But, I mean, he was holding on to Jeff Neal. Jeff Neal would land a takedown. Jeff Neal knocked him down. And honestly, I thought Jeff Neal looked good here. You know, despite being an injury loss, kind of similar to the Chris Barnett and Kenny and Chukani fight. You know, it's their fault that their opponent gets injured. Okay, it's not their fault, but what would be their fault is if they don't go in hungry for the finish. That's what Jeff Neal did. You know, he kept going at him, kept hitting him, going for the takedown, didn't want to engage him on the ground really, landed some big shots when he did, good win for him. Jeff Neal ranked number 10. He'll remain at number 10. And honestly, UFC Tampa needs a main event. Joaquin Buckley could be an option there for you. Joaquin Buckley, Jeff Neal, that would be a fire main event. Other than that, you know, Gilbert Burns could be an option for Jeff Neal. He's not going to go as high as Ian Garry at 7. It does feel kind of weird to punish him by giving him someone in Michael Morales, but we'll see what happens next. If it's me, I'm doing Joaquin Buckley versus Jeff Neal next. As for Dos Anjos, he's ranked 15th at lightweight. He shouldn't be anywhere near the rankings. I honestly would say retirement would be his option, but Dos Anjos, this was his 49th career fight. One more for 50. I do say you give him maybe one more shot, then come back at lightweight, fight a legend in Michael Johnson, fight Jim Miller. If you're going to do welterweight, him versus Nick Diaz would have made more sense. Wonderboy Thompson. You know, I say we give him one last legacy fight to round out his career. But tough loss to see for RDA. But like I said, Jeff Neal is minus 310. There's no way we weren't picking him. Good win for Jeff Neal. Following that, final prelim of the night, and it was insane. The fastest finish of the evening, and no surprise for me. I did not know who Rafael Cerqueira was. All we knew was he was 11-0, but I knew who Ibo Aslan was. I knew how good this kid was, and in he comes. Ibo Aslan's coming in. 5-fight win streak. All of his fights coming by KO. And he gets another KO. Freaking starches Rafael Cerqueira in 51 seconds. This was really the fight. You know, they're going, engaging. I will start sitting him. Rafael's just up against the cage, not defending himself. Lands one shot the entire fight. Attempted one shot the entire fight. Aslan went absolutely ballistic. And eventually, Guard was like, do something. Steps in before he knocks him down. It was phenomenal. Ibo Aslan, ladies and gentlemen. Light heavyweight, look out. This boy's coming for it. And, you know, Ibo Aslan, 28 years old. He's pretty young when we compare him to the other light heavyweights. Number 15th ranked Alonzo Menifield. Number 13th, if the loser of Anthony Smith and Dominic Reyes. The loser of Bogdan Guskov. And I think he's fighting Johnny Walker. There's going to be a lot of options. Loser of Nikita Krylov and Azamat Mirzakhanov. There's going to be a lot of options for Ibo Aslan. I hate to throw these guys to the rankings when they come off big wins like this, but when you look that good, I think you should. You know, you could always give him Ovin St. Preux, good pick-me-up fight for someone trying to get to the rankings. You could always give him Devin Clark, another name for you. But Ibo Aslan coming out. The kid is now 28 years old, 14-1, all 14 wins by knockout. Coming in with some momentum, you love to see it. Good stuff there. With that, though, we get into the main card. And right now, you know, I'm sitting at 5-3. Did pretty good on the prelims, and I was really excited for this main card. I was really pumped for it, and I was not disappointed from the get-go. Shara Magomedov, Armin Petrosian, you've definitely seen the clip right now. Shara Magomedov, 12th career knockout, and it's a double spinning backfist. I mean, what? A double spinning backfist? That's unheard of. That's actually unheard of. Like, who lands a double spinning backfist? Insane knockout, and it comes after round one where Armin Petrosian was outstriking him. I landed him 46-33, but round two, like, Shar just turned it around, hits him with one big shot, gets him to the center of the octagon, and just bam. Hits him with one to kind of get him to block, turns quickly with the other, drops him down. Armin literally just falls flat, literally just rolls over. It's like, that's game over. Shara Magomedov, 15-0, 4-0 in the UFC, and hey, 3-0 so far in 2024. Two performance of the nights, one fight of the night, two knockouts. I mean, if he fights in McCall, he might steal fight of the year for me. I know Alex Pereira and Ian Topira. We're going to mention that in a second. But I mean, to go 4-0, we'll have to see. I doubt it, though. I think they have Shara sit out, and he's not winning fight of the year. But Shara Magomedov, impressive stuff. And when we talk about rankings, you know, a lot of people, you know, I was looking at MMA Theory on Instagram, great MMA page, 19,000 followers. He was suggesting Emin Shabazian if he wants to fight on that China card, November 23rd. He was saying if he waits, he should do a main event or a co-main event against Paulo Costa. I also really like a Michelle Pereira fight. That is just a dream matchup. Chris Curtis matchup could be pretty good, too. He takes on Roman Kapilov or even the winner of that. But I think Shara, they're going to save him. I think they're going to try and give him the Paddy Pimblett treatment, you know. But, I mean, we're getting knockouts like that in Abu Dhabi. You're going to get skyrocketed to the moon. Armin Petrosian now falls to 0-2 in 2024, two-fight losing streak. And sadly for Armin, this is the first time in his career that he's been knocked out. And it was pretty brutal. pretty brutal. I mean, he's been knocked out before in the kickboxing world, but not in the UFC. All right, Shahrbagomedov, we predicted round two KO. We get the round two KO. After that, Lerone Murphy, Dan Ige. And Lerone Murphy, man, continues to be tested with every single step in the UFC. Every chance he gets, he continues to be tested. But another step has been passed. He beats Dan Ige by unanimous decision to improve to 15-0 with one draw, undefeated. Lerone Murphy, this also marks his 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th UFC win, 7-0-1 so far in the UFC. Impressive stuff from Lerone Murphy here. Dan Ige, sadly, is on a two-fight losing streak, is sadly 1-3, but with an 18-9 record, he's never been finished. Never been finished. This one, Dan Ige comes out hard, you know, 32-17 significant strikes, knocked him down in round one. Lerone was able to land a takedown, but Dan Ige also landed a takedown. But after that, I don't know if Dan Ige got hurt or something or what happened, but Lerone, 1-1 on takedowns in round two, 19-11 significant strikes, 36-12 total strikes, just dominate him. And then we get to round three, 1-3 on takedowns, 16 significant strikes to 3. Lerone Murphy gets it done. Drops round one, fights back to wins rounds 2 and 3. Sad to see it for Dan. You know, Dan's a good person. Dan's a good human. And he's also a good fighter. He keeps fighting world-class talent, and that'll happen. Lerone's currently ranked number 12. Ahead of him is Giga Chikadze at 11 and Calvin Kattar at 10, both coming off of losses. So I'm going to move Lerone Murphy to the number 10 spot in the featherweight rankings. Dan Ige's currently at 14. I think he should remain at 14. What should be next for Dan? I mean, it's tough to say. It's really tough to say with Dan Ige. I personally just feel unranked competition. Anyone who's unranked at featherweight, come in, step in line. He sadly probably could be a gatekeeper the rest of his career, but that's just how it goes sometimes. Lerone Murphy, he'll be ranked number 10. Number 8, Josh Emmett is a great option. Loser of Mozgov Evloff and Aljamain Sterling's an option. Arnold Allen's an option. Brian Ortega's an option. Yeah, Rudy. Anyone in the top 10 is an option for Lerone Murphy. He's super talented, looking super good, 33 years old, undefeated. He'll probably be on the next England card, I'm assuming, since he is from England. After that, guys, we got into the final boring, you know, it just wasn't as entertaining as some of the other fights, but this was the little precursor before the co-main and the main event. Magomed Ankalaev, Alexander Rakic in the men's light heavyweight division. And Magomed Ankalaev, I feel like I was getting deja vu watching these fights, because I watch Dan Ige and Alexander Rakic win round one, slowly lose round two, and then lose round three. But Magomed Ankalaev gets it done. Outstrikes Rakic 55-53 in significant strikes, 75-59 total, and doesn't even attempt a takedown. Rakic attempted one takedown. And there's only, clinch work-wise, out of the whole fight, only 2 minutes and 31 seconds was fought in the clinch. Round one, Rakic outstrikes him 22-19, landing some better shots. Magomed is really having a counter fight. Getting around two, Magomed outstrikes him 23-19, landing some good shots there. And then round three, you know, 13-12 significant strikes. It's the 32-17 total strikes you want to look at in favor of Magomed Ankalaev. The clinch work, the knees he was landing, the punches, hurting Rakic. Never was really in danger of finishing him, but did what he had to do. And Magomed Ankalaev is now 21-1 and is on, I don't know what they classify it as. Let me see what the UFC page is officially classifying it as. They're not saying that he's on like a win streak or anything just because of the awkward no contest and draw. But essentially, you know, Magomed Ankalaev is on a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 fight unbeaten streak. Okay, I consider it an 11-fight win streak in my personal opinion. And it probably should be a 12-fight win streak since I thought he beat Hambohovic. But Magomed Ankalaev getting a title shot after this one, it's happening. It's happening probably in, no, I'm not thinking January, I'm thinking maybe April or May of next year, maybe even June. You're going to see Magomed Ankalaev versus Alex Pereira, and it's going to be a good fight. It's going to be a good fight. I definitely favor Pereira in that fight after seeing Magomed just not lean on the grappling. Magomed has not leaned on the grappling since the Hambohovic fight. So, I mean, and before that, he had only used it against Thiago Santos. I mean, he just has not really been using grappling. He's been falling in love with his hands. So, Magomed Ankalaev, Alex Pereira, your next fight right there. As for Rakic, you know, similar to Dan Ige, this is a tough loss, man. This is a tough loss, you know, to do good in round one and then just kind of fade after that. And Rakic, 14-5 record. He's 2-4 in his last six, three-fight losing streak. It's tough for Rakic. It really is. But he's 32. I do not think he is in danger of being cut or anything. But he's just, he's fallen into this awkward realm where he's on a three-fight losing streak, and there's just nothing to do that. By the way, the guys who he's lost to, the number one ranked Jiří Procházka, the number one ranked Magomedov, the number four ranked Tiago Belhovic, all guys above him. There's one guy that is currently above him who he hasn't fought in, Jamal Hill. I think that should be the next fight. You also have Nikita Krylov taking on Azamat Mirzakhanov. The winner of that, I think, should be the next fight. You could even have him fight Khalil Rountree Jr. A lot of options for Rakic. He will stay in the mix, almost like a Petr Yan, where he's like, okay, he's losing to these top guys, but he's not losing bad enough where we should cut him, and he's a good talent. We need to keep him. But Nurmagomedov doing what he needed to do, and I also saw Jamal Hill was, of course, on a little YouTube rant about how Nurmagomedov does not deserve a title shot. Okay, Jamal, you went out and got knocked out by Alex Pereira, and you have done nothing since. Nurmagomedov has been doing all in his possible power to get a title shot, and he keeps winning. So Nurmagomedov gets it done. He was the -410 favorite. No surprise for me here. And I'll tell you something else. I was thinking about this to myself as I was driving home yesterday from my, got to see my folks, got to see my dogs and my aunt. Great, great little visit for a day. I was thinking, you know, I watched Hamzat Chimaev maul Robert Whittaker, and I watched Itopiro knock out Max Holloway. And to first start on Hamzat Chimaev and Robert Whittaker, I wasn't surprised. You know, Hamzat Chimaev starts off the fight, not even 20 seconds in, shoots a takedown, lands it. I mean, the fight lasted 3 minutes, 34 seconds. Hamzat was in control for 3 minutes, 20 seconds, just to give you an idea. All right, and I was not surprised. And he takes his back, and I'm like, I'm not surprised. And he locks in a submission. And the one thing that surprised me was how quick Robert Whittaker tapped. As we soon learned, his entire jaw had been rearranged out of socket due to the grip strength of Hamzat Chimaev. I just wasn't surprised. I truly wasn't. I knew how good Hamzat was, and he showcased it here. I mean, Chimaev mauled him. 25 total strikes he was trying to land. He was trying to lock in that choke, and when he finally got it, he couldn't even get to the neck. And he's like, all right, I'm good on the jaw, and just destroyed Robert Whittaker's jaw. Incredible stuff. And I'm in the middle of a block party. You know, I got a bunch of people around me, and I'm just watching my phone. I'm going, oh my gosh, you got freaking people looking around. Is anyone else seeing this? No one else was seeing it, but that didn't matter to me. I was still so pumped that I'm such a man. I've got down. I'm not even a Robert Whittaker hater. Robert Whittaker's a great guy. But I mean, Hamzat Chimaev finally coming through, finally proving that, hey, I'm feared, I'm legit. And he was, oh my gosh, this camp switch. He's back to that killer Hamzat. People are calling him Demon Hamzat. I mean, this is the guy people are scared of. First finish since September of 2022. It'll be his 7th career submission. And out of his 14 wins, he has 12 finishes. And so far in the UFC, that was his 5th round 1 finish. Oh my goodness. Robert Whittaker, I mean, tough loss. This is the 5th time he's been finished in his career, and this is, I think, the first time he's been submitted. Maybe he was submitted one time before he joined the UFC, but nothing before that. And like a fun fact, I noted Robert Whittaker, since moving to middleweight, where he's been the majority of his UFC career, has only lost to now 3 individuals. The first one is Adesanya, the second Driscus Duplessis, the third Hamzat Chimaev. You best bet Hamzat Chimaev is coming for that undisputed middleweight championship. Hamzat was ranked 13, just beat the number 3 ranked Robert Whittaker. He finished him in 3 minutes and 34 seconds. Yeah, Hamzat Chimaev going to be ranked number 3 in the world. And the people above him, Israel Adesanya. I think Israel Adesanya is actually linked to a fight with Nazardeen Imavov, if I'm not incorrectly speaking. I mean, maybe Kyle Barallo, but I think Nazardeen's linked to a fight with Israel Adesanya. Number 1 ranked Sean Strickland claims, Sean Strickland's claiming that he's going to wait out for the next title shot. No one wants that. He had a boring fight with Paulo Costa. His fight against Driscus Duplessis in January is a complete afterthought. I don't even remember that fight. I think you give Hamzat Chimaev the next title shot. I think it's the most entertaining option. And the only other option here is you wait and do Sean Strickland versus Driscus Duplessis, and you give the winner of that to Hamzat Chimaev. But I think Hamzat Chimaev, the next time he's in an octagon, he will be fighting for the middleweight championship of the world. And oh my goodness, I don't know who he's going to be. I think I'm stuttering over my words. There's just no one who I think can beat him. Truly, you have to catch him on the feet or catch him in submission. He will run through Sean Strickland. Okay, Sean Strickland will last less time than freaking Robert Whittaker. I mean, Sean Strickland has not faced anyone with the pressure that Hamzat Chimaev gave to Whittaker. And as for Whitaker, you know, this is a tough loss, man. This is a tough loss. He's going to be out a fat minute, and he has to assess what he's going to come back and fight for. There's an option to move up to 205. I don't really think that's in the cards. I think Whitaker comes back, falls into gatekeeper territory against someone like Kyle Barallo. Maybe someone like Anthony Hernandez has finally worked their way up by then. Maybe Shahar Magomedov by the time he's back has worked his way up into that realm. But I think Whitaker just needs to sit out. I'm going to wait for a lot of other things at middleweight to play out. And maybe once we figure out when he can return, we talk about what fight is next for him. But I mean, I think Amzat's going to speed run the middleweight division. I mean, I give Driscus Duplessis the best chance to beat him. I think he wrestles Adesanya to death off the bat. He wrestles Strickland off the bat to death. And Nasrdin and Kyle, they're both talented. But it's just, you have to stop that initial burst. And if you can't get past that initial burst, then you're done for, you know. So, good win for Khamzat. Tough loss for Rob. But man, it was so hyped to see. And we correctly predicted it. Now, the only incorrect prediction I had for this main card was the round. I had round two for the Itoprio knockout. He did it at the start of round three. So, we weren't, I guess, 100%. But yeah, we knew it. Topira knocks out Max Holloway. And as much as I would love to make Topira the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world, you know, Islam's at one, Pereira's at two, John Jones is at three, Topira's at four. Jones still hasn't fought, and I'm moving Topira up to three. Okay, I'm moving him up to three. And you could move him past Pereira and Makhachev, you know, because what Topira has done is unheard of. You know, no one else has really knocked out the two goats of a division in back-to-back fights. You know, we talk about the greatest of all time. Volk was the greatest featherweight of all time. Holloway was in debate with Aldo for the second best of all time. Topira just knocked them both out. You know, Max Holloway had never been knocked down in his career. He was just knocked out for the first time in his career. Ilya Topira gets his sixth career knockout, 14th career finish. I mean, he's spoken into existence. The kid's 27 years old. He's going to be headlining Madrid, probably against Volkanovski in his next fight. I personally think you should do Volkanovski versus Lopez and have the winner fight Topira. But, I mean, Ilya Topira just, mwah, chef's kiss. I mean, starts off round one. Starts off the fight, wanting to throw down in the middle of the octagon. Holloway says no. Topira feels him out a bit. Holloway, of course, has more volume. Outstrikes him 30 to 22 significantly. And Topira lands two nasty takedowns. Attempts two takedowns. Picks him up on both of them. Holloway is able to get back up to his feet. But it just kind of, Topira's just kind of showing him like, hey, I can take you wherever I want. Round two comes around. 35 to 32. You know, you're getting a Max Holloway clinic. You know, you're getting the Max Holloway that we all know and love, but Topira's staying there with him. You know, it's like Holloway gives him two. Topira hits him with a hard one back. He's kind of like, okay, barely outstrikes him there. And then we get into round three. Round three started off, and Holloway, you know, this isn't Yair Rodriguez. This isn't Volkanovski. This isn't Arnold Allen. This isn't the Korean Zombie. You can't trade in the pocket with a guy like Ilya Topira, and he gets hit with a straight that sends Holloway crashing back into the cage, and he's just kind of like kind of a wake-up shot. He's up against the cage, eating shots, finally gets away, then gets clipped again as he's backing away, gets hit with the exact same punch that Jair Herbert's been caught with, that Volkanovski's been caught with, that everyone that he's knocked out's been caught with, and that is that hook, and it drops him to the floor. Literally, like, such power. Like, Holloway just is thrown to the floor with this punch, and then a couple follow-up shots. Holloway's out cold, and Ilya Topira is your featherweight champion. Still insane. Insane from Ilya Topira, what he has just done. Like, Poirier couldn't do it. McGregor couldn't do it. Volk couldn't do it. Gaethje couldn't do it. No one could even drop this guy. And he's knocked out in round three. Round three. Ilya Topira, -250 favorite for a reason. Yeah. Yeah. He's goats are a weird word to throw around, but I mean, he might be the featherweight goat. I mean, come on. Dude's knocked out the two greatest of all time at featherweight. And two of the greatest champions of all time. And he's just insane. Ilya Topira, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8-0 in the UFC. 16-0 professionally. And he's only 27 years old. I mean, this guy. He's so entertaining. But yes, I think Volkanovski is going to be next. Do I think it should be? I don't even know who to give this guy. I'll be honest, I don't know who. I think he runs through Volk. You know, I think Diego Lopez might give him some trouble. I mean, I think Lopez has that initial burst, but I also think Lopez gets caught at times. Mozafar Evlov and Aljamain Sterling, I think Aljamain gets brutally knocked out. I think Mozafar could really, like, since Mozafar is so grapple heavy, he could give Topira a somewhat tough time. But I mean, as I look through, Yair Rodriguez, no. Brian Ortega, no. Arnold Allen. People are saying Arnold Allen, no, but I don't think Arnold Allen's going to get back into an opportunity for that. Josh Emmett, we already saw what happened there. Calvin Kattar, no. Geegan, no. I mean, I don't actually know if the person who beat Tito Pereira is in the company. I don't think they're at featherweight, you know, and definitely not bantamweight. I know we were talking about Sean O'Malley at some point. And Paddy Pimblett has the submission ability. Paddy Pimblett has the grappling to keep up with Ito Pereira. He doesn't have you can't eat punches from Ito Pereira. Now, you can't talk super fights. You know, Ito Pereira's mentioned he wants to become a double champion. I mean, Merab's his boy, you know, both of them from Georgia, so he's not fighting him. The only opportunity you're going to get at bantamweight for Ito Pereira, which is going to be a nasty weight cut, would be someone like Corey Sanhagen, someone like Umar Nurmagomedov, those type of guys. When we talk about lightweight, Islam Makhachev is not going to be the person to defend his belt. Islam Makhachev, if he beats Arman Tsarukyan, is probably looking at Bilal Muhammad. And honestly, I don't think Bilal is going to be champion. Okay, I think Shavkat Rakhmonov is going to beat Bilal. And I think the super fights that you have coming with potentially Shavkat Rakhmonov and Islam Makhachev, and then with potentially, you could even have Arman Tsarukyan and, what's his face, Ito Pereira. There's just so many options out there. I'm excited to see what happens. But Ito Pereira, sky's the limit. Holloway, I mean, it's the exact same. The main and co-main, same situation. Legends going down. These young studs coming up. And I don't know what to do with Holloway, man. You know, Holloway could always stay at featherweight. Okay, there's a Diego Lopez fight potentially. There's a Mosvar Elvav fight. I mean, there really isn't. I think Max Holloway's path takes him to lightweight. Okay, he has the BMF belt. You know, Hanan Moicano, Dan Hooker. I saw those names being thrown around. Michael Chandler, Charles Oliveira. I mean, Gaethje and Poirier, they're always gonna throw the name around. You could even have him fight Conor McGregor. I think Holloway will come back, but I think he needs to take some time off. This is mentally probably defeating for him. I hope not, you know. But I mean, to have never been knocked down in your career and you're knocked out for the first time, insane. Ito Pereira wins the night. Hamzat Chimaev in a close second. Both of those gentlemen getting performance of the night bonuses. So with the same with Shahram Magomedov getting a performance of the night. Insane night from UFC 308. Not even night. Insane midday card from UFC 308. It was fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic. And goodness me, I can't wait to see the updated rankings. I can't wait to talk about the updated rankings on the next episode. But when we talk about Fighter of the Year, as we were mentioning, you know, here's the issue. Ito Pereira and Alex Pereira are the only two now. They're the only two. There's no one else. There's going to be no one else. I don't care if you get six fights in during the year. It's between Alex Pereira and Ito Pereira. And now the debate comes down to, okay, you got Alex Pereira, who saved three cards. 300 didn't have a main event. Alex Pereira stepped up against Jamahal Hill, knocks him out in great fashion, okay? Comes back, saves UFC 303 when McGregor pulls out, knocks out Jiří Procházka for the second time. Then UFC 307, they cannot find a main event, saves the day against Khalil Roundtree Jr. He saved three cards, he main evented three cards, he knocked out three different people on three different cards. Fastest person in the three-tail defenses in of all time, okay? I don't think anyone's going to top that. What Alex Pereira did this year was insane. He went from already being a top star to being the top star, number two pound-for-pound guy on the planet. But then Ito Pereira, you know, comes in, and Volkanovski had been knocked out before by Makhachev. But at featherweight, no one had even touched him. No one had even touched him at featherweight. And Ito Pereira manhandles him, knocks him out in round two. Okay, knocks out the GOAT of featherweight. Then comes out what he did to Max Holloway. Max Holloway was him. He was self-proclaimed him. He had knockout of the year. And now, what Ito Pereira has just done is he has made us all question, should Gaethje versus Holloway be knockout of the year? Like, was it the coolest looking knockout? Yeah, but I think Ito Pereira might have had knockout of the year. We've never had a situation where a guy in Max Holloway, 30-plus fights, never been knocked down, is knocked out for the first time in his career in a guy named Ito Pereira. So I'm probably going to give it to Alex Pereira, but depending on how the rest of the year goes, depending how, you know, the afterthoughts of this event, you know, because we definitely have a recency bias. We'll have to wait for a month to pass. I'll have to decide. But yeah, a lot of crazy stuff. I think Hamzat Chimaev might get submission of the year. I don't know. DDP submitting Asang is probably going to take it, but definitely in the conversation. A lot of exciting stuff to come. UFC 308 was a massive, massive W. And with that, men and ladies, that is it. That's all we have for today's episode. Such a fun time. UFC 308 was such a fun time. Even watching the NFL this week was actually pretty entertaining. I wasn't too bored. You know, I wasn't necessarily locked in on the NFL. But 308, I was super locked in. As for all my UFC stands, which I think is the majority of my audience and my close friends, here's the UFC schedule rest of the year. You know, we get Moreno Albazi in Canada. It's Halloween weekend. Probably won't be watching that. November 9th, you know, you get UFC Vegas 100, Neil Magny and Carlos Prates. If it's on, I'll watch it. November 16th, John Jones, Stipe Miocic, mwah, the chef's kiss. November 23rd, pre-Thanksgiving, we go to Macau, China. Banger card there. Then, final pay-per-view of the year after taking Thanksgiving weekend off, we go to Las Vegas for UFC 310 and the weekend before, I guess if you want to consider it Christmas weekend because Christmas is on Wednesday, but December 14th, we have UFC Tampa, which still doesn't have a card, but we have an exciting schedule to round out the year. And going through October, October was a fantastic, fantastic year. I mean, Hernandez Pereira, it was a kind of a mid-card. Ravel Torreira was better than that one. But UFC 307, fantastic. Two pay-per-views in October, both amazing. That's how we close it all out. And with that, I'll be saying goodbye to you all in October. Next time I see you, actually, I think I'll be releasing an episode. I'll release episode 135 on Halloween. So next time I see you, we're getting spooky. We're getting festive. That's what we're going to do. Guys, I'll see you all next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.